WILL programming is made possible by your local DuPont Pioneer team, committed to providing the products and agronomic insights farmers need to achieve success, investing in innovative traits and technologies to meet the needs of a growing population. Pioneer, with you from the word go.
From the Van Drum Conference in Kansas City, Missouri, I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the marketplace with Kevin Van Trump of the Van Trump Report and Mike Mock of the Lansing Group. And we'll also check out some really interesting, brand new, disruptive seed technologies that were signed into accordance with Bex Seeds just today. And we'll do that right here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, no markets as we're still at the Van Trump Conference here in Kansas City, Missouri. It's a big conference with about 500 producers and others from all across the nation. One of the most interesting things that I heard this morning from the panel that was discussing market direction came from Warren Preston. He's a deputy chief economist at USDA in Washington, D.C. I asked him in particular about the RFS and whether those numbers for advanced biofuels, biodiesel, will be incorporated into the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates that are due out on Friday of this week. The answer to that question, he says, is yes.
Todd, the short answer is yes. We consider that now final policy, and once policy is finalized, our members of the Interagency Commodity Estimates Committees will take those numbers into account as they develop the supply and demand tables and coming out with the WASDE estimates.
That's Warren Preston from USDA talking about this Friday's World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate. We'll, of course, have those numbers for you Friday morning at 11 o'clock on our website at willag.org, willag.org. Coming up in this half hour or two, we'll take a look at the weather forecast. We'll stick around. We have some really interesting thoughts about South America, Argentina in particular. That coming from Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, for 100 years offering financial products and services specifically for the agricultural industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area today. A mix of clouds, some sun early, followed this afternoon by cloudy skies, a high of 35 degrees for the day. Tonight, clouds over the evening, they'll give way to a clear sky later on and will drop to a low of 20 degrees because of that on a west-northwest wind at 10 to 20 miles an hour. Tomorrow, partly cloudy skies, a high of 24, winds out of the west-northwest at 15 to 25. And Thursday, clear to partly cloudy skies, a low of 18 degrees for the evening, winds out of the west-northwest at 10 to 20. By the time we get to Friday, sunshine, a few clouds, we'll go to 26 as our high for the day. And then we'll drop back on Friday night to a low of 17 degrees under partly cloudy skies with a west-southwest wind at 5 to 10 miles an hour. Saturday should show us cloudy skies in the morning. That'll give away to mostly cloudy skies during the afternoon, a high of 30 degrees. And Saturday evening, snow. That'll become lighter overnight with a low of 26 with the wind out of the south-southeast by then at 10 to 20 miles an hour. The chance of snowfall on Saturday night set at 80%. Could have as much as 1 to 3 inches worth of accumulation. And then on Sunday, variable clouds, some snow showers will continue, less than an inch. Temps nearly steady in the low to mid-30s. Sunday night, more snow in the evening, 1 to 3 inches, and we'll have a low of 21 degrees. And a north-northwest wind at 10 to 15 miles an hour. Snow accumulation again on Sunday night of between 1 and 3 inches.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. This is Todd Gleason at the Van Trump Conference in Kansas City, Missouri. Kevin Van Trump is here. He organizes the conference. Why do you put it together?
I do it to help the farmers. I bring together a lot of my friends from the industry, the ag industry, as well as the hedge fund side, the trading side, technology side, and we just try and help people, think a little bit differently, think outside the box, so to speak, and rather than a rear view mirror type approach, maybe looking out the front windshield to see where things are coming and what obstacles and hurdles lie ahead.
What have you learned this morning that you think is valuable?
Well, I think, like I just said, I think we're going to have to change our way of thinking a little bit with the advent of technology. We're going to have to be more open to it. We're going to have to, I think, define the changes and rules that have been put in place and learn how to make those appropriate adjustments off of those rather than lament over the hard times.
Clearly, you believe that technology will, again, make fewer people needed on the farm for farm labor. I think that's one of the takeaways I've learned from you and probably the conference earlier in the day today. Are there other things that producers can look forward to as it relates to disruptions in, for instance, the seed industry?
Well, I think, you have a lot of things coming on. I think what the main focus is how much cheaper we've seen the computer, the computer power become. You've got Amazon now, guys out at Amazon that are able to use supercomputers that were never able to be used, and that's changing the way seed technology and other technology is being put together. So I think guys have to be aware that we're seeing startups and spring-ups that are able to get their hands on computer capabilities that weren't in the market before, Todd. So I think that is going to allow some significant changes to take place over the next decade.
Let's talk a little bit about the market in general. What did you learn today, or what do you think today about the wheat market? You had a whole bunch of questions.
Well, I'd say the wheat market, I'm long wheat, and I think wheat's got a chance just because of the geopolitical tensions that may arise here in the with the new leaders in Washington, and we may get a chance to see wheat pop back above $5. Like I said, with the carry in the market, it's going to be tough from a trade perspective. But as from a producer's perspective, I'm being patient. I see no reason to get in a hurry down here towards the bottom. And even though we could drift sideways to lower from here, I think there's enough geopolitical tension in here that we could see a chance to maybe market at better prices.
However, I think you also believe you're concerned that basis, even if we go above $5, may not allow cash price to do the same.
Yeah, I think the big question is if guys can get above 450 in the cash. And that's kind of a spot. 460 cash seems to be workable for folks. I should say workable. I don't think anyone's getting rich, that's for sure. But, yeah, I think that is going to be an issue. As prices go up, you're going to see the basis probably deteriorate, and that's going to work against guys. So our only hope is that it happens quick and furious. And when that happens, like I said to you before, shoot when the ducks are in the air, and you got to take the risk off the table. And that's our only chance in this environment where we got this glut of supply.
Most everybody agreed that farmers would sell as much corn for this year and next year as they could at $4. However, Mike Mock had an interesting point. Based off something you have said, you think corn could go to 450. He said his biggest concern was that farmers would hear you say 450 and not make a sale at $4.
Well, I think farmers have been conditioned through the years to look at a number. Like Mike said, we got to look at total revenue. And this year wasn't as bad as some guys thought. Even though prices were low, we had the bushels to offset that. So total revenue is the key here. Know what your break-evens are. Know what your total revenue is going to be. And that's where your price target should be, not necessarily just an arbitrary number like 450 that's thrown out, even though that's how we've kind of been conditioned through the years to look at these things. So it's a lot more business-oriented these days, and we have to run our farms like a business and know our break-evens so we can make those proper positions and targets in the market.
Finally, we don't talk about this very often on the air, but you have a really great newsletter that comes out every day. How do producers get hold of it?
All they got to do is go to our website. It's at vantrumpreport.com. We offer it free. I don't like anybody to pay for anything if it's not something they can use, so check it out for a while. You can stay on it. I've had guys tell me they weren't sure if they wanted it for 6 months, 7 months, and I don't really, either way, you know, if it's something you guys can use on your farm and your operation, that'd be great, and we'd love to get it out in your hands. And if not, we understand, and I wish everyone the best.
It's a magnificent conference today. Congratulations on it, too.
Thank you, Todd. I appreciate all you guys do, too. I'm glad the U of I was here represented and you guys here with Will Ag, and we'll try and do anything we can to help you guys continue to do what you do. So thank you.
That's Kevin Van Trump of the Van Trump Report. We're here at his conference in Kansas City, Missouri. Up on stage, as we just said, earlier today was Mike Mock, formerly of the Andersons and now with the Lansing Group. It's a companion company to the Andersons. He retired from the Andersons earlier in the year. Congratulations on that. I asked Kevin a little bit about a statement you made, which was your biggest fear was that everybody'd hear Kevin Van Trump say $4.50 corn and they wouldn't sell $4 corn.
Yeah. That's a concern I have. People will get the, I call it price fixation. And Kevin's trusted and he's a great friend of the producer. And they hear that number tossed out. And we think there's nothing wrong with having some bushels available, Mr. Gleason, to sell that number, but we've got to start prior to that. I mean, March corn futures are under 360 today. 450 is a long way off. And even with December 17 corn futures, you know, trading in the mid-380s, 450 is a long way off, and I don't think we can wait for that price to get started.
Is 380 an okay place to start with new crop corn?
I think it is, particularly for the grower in Illinois. And there are a number of ways that a lot of farmers out there have storage capacity. And yesterday, the March 18 corn futures traded 401. What's wrong with a $4 HTA for January, February, March delivery on the corn you're going to plant this spring? So it's not a bad place, at least to get started. We'd be more inclined to get a little more aggressive in terms of percentages with soybeans, but we still think for the right grower, particularly the grower that owns a lot of his ground, you know, in better shape, nothing wrong with locking in 10-20% at that kind of number as a place to start.
You'd be more aggressive with soybeans, old and new crop, I take it.
Absolutely, yeah. It's just, the market's sending a signal, and we're responding to it. Could beans go higher with some South American issues? Fine. Well, then we'll do a little more. We might even get to a situation. I've talked to some growers that said, every 50 cents to a dollar, I'm reevaluating whether I switch a few more acres over or I tear up a little more wheat and plant soybeans. So we're not advocating anyone go out and sell an entire crop of it. We want to begin the process of scaling in corn and getting a little more aggressive in new crop soybeans, given this price.
And as you said, tear up a few acres of wheat. Have we figured out really where acres might disappear if they really need to disappear in the United States?
That's a real challenge. We're the opinion, and I think the panel's discussed, that the wheat acreage number might, maybe not the January 12th, which is our first indication of the seedings number, but then as we go further on into June, that people will look at other alternatives, because the market's sending a clear signal at a bean premium to wheat, at a corn premium to wheat, that we have to do something different.
Thanks so much, Mike.
It's great to see you.
Mike Mock is with the Lansing Group, a companion company of the Andersons.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Wednesday afternoon. We're coming to you from the Kevin Van Trump Conference in Kansas City, Missouri, where many have been presenting all kinds of things throughout the day, including some biotechnology and seed interest. Benson Hill Biosystems is a brand new company. Matt Crisp is here. He's the president and CEO. Their objective, I believe, is to change, maybe interrupt is the better way to put this, the way farmers purchase seed and actually maybe even the way seed is developed for farmers. Thanks for being with us, Matt. Can you tell me a little bit about Benson Hill?
Sure. Thanks for having me. So Benson Hill is an agriculture technology company. We were founded about 5 years ago. And exactly as you said, we're looking to change the way that seed is developed, and specifically at a genomics and genetics level, how advancements can be made and made more rapidly and made more available to more growers and more growing areas that improve overall crop performance. And so we've developed a suite of technologies that uses big data and analytics and cloud computing, and we've begun to take recommendations out of a computational platform that we call CropOS for Crop Operating System and apply those genetic improvements in crop plants like corn and soy. And what we're seeing is a marked increase in crop productivity. And we've begun not only to advance those products to market, but in the recent past, to make our platform available more broadly in the industry to other innovators, to small and medium-sized innovators in seed genomics, who can use the same types of approaches that we've used and improve crop performance for a variety of traits and different geographies.
Can I summarize this, and you let me know whether I've got it right, as the way CropOS may work, because it's a big data system. So if I visualize it, I might think of a giant-sized Excel spreadsheet, probably not quite that, but something along those lines that has all kinds of traits, and then what if thens in it. Mm-hmm. So as you develop a new product line, you can simply put it into the CropOS and say, I'd like to run all the possible scenarios with weather and yield and rainfall based on this trait and insecticide pressure and insect mm-hmm. pressure. And what happens to this trait in this set of genomics? Is that, in a small way, roughly what you do?
That is right. And when we're looking at big data, we're able to today, using computational systems that are available even to smaller companies, consider millions, billions, trillions of different of these iterations that you mentioned. So looking in a much bigger way at very complex systems like plants and predicting effectively what will happen in a field environment. And it's not. I think we've seen some of this type of technology talked about and begun to get taken up in the market around the notion of precision agriculture, which uses IT systems and big data and so forth, particularly in weather models to look at crop performance on farm. What we're looking at is the biology, and that's an important distinction. So it's understanding how, when you tweak a genome, when you tweak a gene in a plant, how that can lead to a significant increase, irrespective maybe of the environmental conditions or perturbations that make a crop ultimately more stable from a yield perspective, a higher yielding. In some cases, in other crops, we're looking at traits that improve grain profile or oil composition. And so the genome holds the keys to a lot of this type of information. And using computation today, we can analyze it on a tremendous scale with only a few people, whereas, say, 5, 10, 15 years ago, this type of thing would really have been unattainable for a small or medium-sized company.
You're taking the muddy boots R&D and putting it into the computer.
You got it. And that's an important, like I said, that's a really important distinction is, as we like to say, the one common denominator throughout the entire ag value chain is the biology. We still need to deliver good genetics and genomics to the grower so that they can ultimately deliver consistent and high-performing crops to their offtake, to the end users, and you know we can look at decision support models on farm, and that certainly plays a big role. But we think we have the opportunity today that didn't exist only a few years ago to really move the dial from a genetics perspective as well.
So essentially, you're taking a lot of the research and development dollars, minimizing them by running them through a computational system instead of actually doing the muddy boots sorts of things. Have you been successful yet in making this happen?
We have. In fact, we're seeing trait prediction rates that are more than 10 times the industry average. And so what that means is we're looking purely in silico, purely in a computational system, and predicting positive biological results at a rate that's more than 10 times the industry standard, industry average. So we're seeing that in the field. We just completed our second year of corn hybrid trials throughout different locations in the Midwest and different genetic backgrounds, and are very pleased with the results. Now we're obviously on a path to develop these products and make them available to the grower as soon as possible. But I think more impactfully, we're seeing this not just inside of Benson Hill. We're partnering with other companies and giving them the same tools and technology, and they in turn are also seeing results.
Who uses CropOS? Who's the target market as the beginning user? I can see how it disrupts the R&D system, maybe even disrupts the price of seed at the other end because you don't have all the upfront development costs. But who are the users? It's probably certainly not a Monsanto or a DuPont.
That's correct. And in fact, we're partnered with a handful of companies that you might not think of course, as the big three or the big six, soon to be the big three or four. But companies like CTC, which is the largest Brazilian sugarcane company, Simplot, which is a leader in potato. Companies like Bex, which we announced this morning, are using Breed, which is a decision support application that sits on CropOS to help guide and accelerate in a dramatic way their breeding practices to improve genetics and obviously for corn hybrids. So these types of players are adopting the technology and taking it ultimately to the grower in their respective crop area.
Tell me more about the agreement with Bex, because Benuba farmers will now understand that this is coming to them in a real way.
Absolutely. So on top of CropOS, we have a number of applications, and we might think about these as a software interface. And Breed is one of these software interfaces that we launched this year. And we've signed multiple commercial partners. And most recently, as I mentioned this morning, Bex signed onto this platform. And effectively, we'll be able to use the scale of computation and the analytics that Benson Hill's invested in over the last more than 5 years, to the tune of more than $20 million at this point, and plug it straight into their breeding programs. And what that ultimately does is it accelerates decision support, and it takes a typical go-to-market product development cycle and can reduce it by as much as half. So we're getting better varieties and more choice to farmers faster.
So we can see something coming from Sonny Buck and Bex faster and maybe cheaper in the future.
I think that's right. As innovation accelerates in agriculture, we're going to see pricing pressure. We're going to see more players participating in the market. We're going to see more choice ultimately for growers. And this is a cornerstone of Beck's philosophy. This is a terrific organization that we're very, very happy to be partnered with, but that truly believes in the fact that with innovation directed in the right way, we don't have to spend the hundreds of millions of dollars that some of the big guys have spent to have equal or even better outputs.
Are you an investable company?
We are right now in a private setting. We've raised about $10 million of financing over the last 4 years, and we'll be announcing a Series B closing here in the next quarter or so.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
That, of course, is Matt Crisp. He is the president and CEO of Benson Hill Biosystems. You can find them at www.bensonhillbio.com or on Twitter at Benson Hill Bio.
Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
It's National Cotton Candy Day. Cotton candy was brought to the masses by William Morrison and John Wharton. They introduced it at the St. Louis World Fair in 1904 as Fairy Floss. Fairgoers snatched up the treat, paying 25 cents, half the price of admission to the fair, for a single box. The pair patented the first electric machine for spinning sugar in 1897. It's also Feast of St. Ambrose of Milan, patron of beekeepers. On this day in agricultural history in 1863, Richard Warren Sears was born. He developed his mail order jewelry business into Sears, Roebuck & Company. By 1894, the Sears catalog was 507 pages long. In 1879, Charles Broly was born, a Canadian naturalist. His investigations were among the first to implicate DDT as an environmental threat. In 1909, Leo Baekeland was issued a patent for Bakelite, the first plastic that did not soften when heated. The patent is generally remembered as the heat and pressure patent, and it largely gave birth to the modern plastics industry. Bakelite has been used in everything from engine parts to jewelry to electronics. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm Todd Gleason at the Van Trum Conference in Kansas City. We're now joined by Drew Lerner. He's here in Kansas City as well. Thanks, Drew, for being with us. Can you tell me about the weather forecast for the global growing regions in South America and the United States?
Certainly. We are looking at a pattern right now in South America that is troublesome for southern Argentina. Now, they aren't too dry today, but there's not much precipitation that is expected to occur in the southern portions of Argentina as we go forward through this next full 10 days. It's already been a few days without rain, so we do expect the ground to firm up over this time period, and stress will likely begin to evolve across many areas from southern portions of Cordoba and La Pampa straight eastward through Buenos Aires and into parts of Uruguay, maybe even southern portions of Rio Grande do Sul. So if all of that region ends up with no rain over the next 10 days, there will be a broad area of very short topsoil moisture. The subsoil moisture situation will still be favorable for a while, so crop stress will not be at exceptionally high levels quite yet. But if indeed we go through a second week of dry weather, the situation could change quite a bit. So we're watching that closely. The rest of Argentina and most of Brazil continues to be poised for excellence as far as crop development is concerned. There's an abundance of rain occurring in parts of Brazil and will continue to be the case as we go forward through the next 10 days to 2 weeks. And I think it's going to be a very good scenario for a large crop coming out of that country. In the United States, the biggest concern that we've got right now is really tomorrow morning. We're going to see some bitter cold temperatures occurring down across portions of the hard red winter wheat country. The area in particular we're watching closely is southwestern Kansas and southeastern Colorado, maybe a few spots in Nebraska as well. These areas may be snow-free, and temperatures tomorrow morning may be bottoming out somewhere in the positive and negative single-digit readings. And if we go below zero for any great length of time, some of this poorly established crop out there in southwest Kansas and southeastern Colorado could be injured. Now, I don't think the odds are very high that we're going to see widespread problems out there. There is a band of snow occurring this afternoon across northwest and north central Kansas as well as Colorado, so those areas will be adequately protected, and I think it'll just be a few fields that are vulnerable to some damage. So the bottom line is I think we'll get through this situation without too much to talk about. In the southeastern corner of the U.S., where drought has been prevailing for months, there has been a substantial improvement in soil moisture over the past week to 10 days, and the situation is expected to improve. Additionally, this will stymie some of that conversation that's out there in the marketplace about drought in the southeastern U.S. advancing northwestward for next summer. But there's still a lot of time yet to come, so we'll see what happens to what's left of that dryness a little bit later in the year.
Thanks so much, Drew. We appreciate you taking the time with us today.
All right. Have a great day.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. This has been the Closing Market Report coming to you today from Kansas City, Missouri, and the Van Trump Conference. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.